Welcome, listeners. Today we're doing a podcast interview between the IT skeptic, Rob England, that's me, and one of Pink Elephant's leading thinkers and bloggers, Mr. Troy Dumoulin. Troy, introduce yourself.
Well, hello, Rob. It's good to be with you today from Canada. Well, I've been with Pink Elephant now for going on 12 years, and I've been in the IT industry for probably about 15 now. And I've first entered Pink's organization basically from the service desk perspective, being we used to do staff augmentation services, and we had that service, and this is how I entered as the technical support side of things. Moved on to service desk management myself, and then found myself in the interesting world of ITSM consulting. So I've been actually working with organizations to adopt ITIL service management principles for approximately 10 years now. And I've seen a lot, been through some interesting both successes and also some fabulous failures. So this is how I've come to this context. And because I've had that interesting, diverse history from both global and local and small organization, I have some interesting perspectives to share. And that's what I write on from a point of view of the blogs and the articles that I write and speak about.
And I think you have some great content. I highly commend to listeners to check out Troy's blog on the Pink Elephant site. I think, yes, you have some very interesting and deep ideas. I think you're a deep thinker in this stuff, which I quite enjoy. We were talking.
I like to keep it practical and fun, though.
Indeed.
And it's an interesting time we live in from a service management perspective. It's a time where ITIL's been around a long time, but the adoption curve of service management in general seems to be on the rise. Now, what does that mean? The acceptance and the adoption perhaps are two different things. But it's good to be here today, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I think that we've gone over the top of the Gartner hype curve, and we're getting both sides of the conversation about service management these days, I think, both the positive enthusiasm and a little bit of the skepticism from people like yours truly.
Yeah, let me give you a qualification. What I agree with is that the acceptance of ITIL has basically gone over the hype curve. It's no longer kind of an embarrassing thing to say you're an ITIL consultant, and you know, people start to snicker. You know, pretty much everyone has heard about it now. They realize there's value in it. There's enough momentum behind it where it's okay to say it in polite company. So the concept of what's an ITIL and why should I care is no longer an issue. But the interesting thing is that the adoption of ITIL, we're 20 years into this now, and you would expect that somewhere in the world you'd find an ITIL Shangri-La. Like, you know, some company, but even more importantly, some region of our globe that has been at this long enough that we could look over there and say, hey, they've got it all going right, and you know, regardless of what version we're talking about, they're just focusing on service management, and they have all these processes running across the organization. Well, if you have any exposure on a global basis, and you know, Rob, you talk to many people from all different walks of life in the ITIL world, it's really not the case. Pretty much regardless of when each country has been exposed to ITIL, they're all at the same level of adoption. I call it the incident, problem, and change dance. They go incident, problem, change, maybe throw in a better request, and they stop dead because they don't have a business case to go any further. And I think that's part of the adoption issue, is that one of the challenges that we face is that many portions of the ITIL model, especially now in version 3 with the whole service lifecycle, is beyond the cultural readiness of an organization to adopt. So while it's accepted, the acceptance and the adoption rate is not the same.
That's interesting, isn't it? It's something to do with a maturity of the way we think about the whole of IT, right? And its context in the business.
Indeed it is. In fact, there was an interesting picture that was actually part of the Planning to Implement Service Management book in ITIL version 2 that we've done some thinking about and writing on. And it has a tiered model, and I'll kind of give it to you this brief overview. The first model is technology focused. And by the way, this model refers to IT's understanding of itself within a business context, but the reverse is also true, the understanding of the business, of IT's role within the business context. Mm-hmm. And the first level here is what you get to when you're technology-focused. A technology-focused organization gets what it means to be supporting, to support users, support business, to get service desk up and running, to get some basic change control in place. It understands the what we used to call support processes. It makes sense in a technology context. But other than that, the majority of their focus is optimizing technology, and that technology is looked at by domain. So I've got a box, an application, a router, a switch, and I look at them and I manage them all in mythical isolation, as if somehow they don't exist in a connective sense. I manage them in this mythical isolation. For that organization, there's a big challenge to build a business case for a service catalog, because that organization doesn't understand what a service is, nor care to manage it. So the next level up in this model, you get to this concept of needing to know what connects to what. So at first it starts at a systems orientation, where I want to know what applications are connected to what servers and what databases. And then it starts to get to this point of, okay, well, these X number of systems, they all do this business function of deep water drilling or power generation. So I get to this concept of service orientation. But now I become interested in things like the service catalog or the CMDB, because the whole principle of CMDB is relationships and modeling services. But I'm still not working at an enterprise focus, so I'm kind of shifting now up a level to this concept of you're an internal IT group, I'm a shared services group, there's an external provider, and we have a business customer. And regardless of who pays our salary or what title we bear or what part of the organization we find ourselves in, we're just all IT. And now I can start thinking about things like, portfolio management, perhaps, or business service management, the concept of enterprise services. The model keeps going a little bit, Rob. There's two more levels, because there's an interesting step into the next concept. And that's when you have this concept of, when I'm at a third level of that service provider, I think of myself as separate and distinct from the business. You know, this is where ITIL version 2 stopped, by the way. Yeah. And the beautiful principle was, I have this customer on one side of the table, I'm on the other, I'm very distinct and different, and I have my catalog of services between us, but yet, even though I share the same brand on my sweater or my collared shirt, we're somehow different. That's the business I'm IT.
Yeah.
The next level up is when that distinction disappears. When you realize, wait a minute, IT is only one of many service providers in the business context. And I get away from this concept of requiring alignment, because I understand there's not two separate entities here. It's a partnership. And the final, just to summarize this model, is when I realize that the business process itself is not distinguishable or separable from the technology that supports it. The moment technology fails, the business process completely stalls.
And have you ever found one of them, Troy?
Well, I have an exact case study for you. The last thing I'll say about this is that depending on where you are in that model, Rob,
yeah,
various parts of ITIL will either make sense or totally be irrelevant to you.
That's so true.
And this is what's really caused the adoption rate. Now, you asked me a question, have I ever found one? Well, here's a perfect case study. Because this is not uncommon to find a group within an IT function at each level. The perfect example is a telco. Have you ever dealt with a telecommunications organization?
I have.
Okay, so you know that one part of the organization sells technology services to an outside market, right?
Yeah.
So they know what it means to be value chain. They're portfolio-driven, strategic, they're revenue-focused, their market penetration and company expansion, they have the same goals of the business. Why? Because their understanding of the goal is value chain. But then I have the shared services group, the techies in the back room in the data center. They just want to focus on the box, the application, the switch, and they're totally at the technology optimization, bottom of the level. And most of ITIL does no sense for them, makes no sense at all, because they don't need service management to optimize technology by performance and cost. Then I have an application group in the same organization, because they deal every day with their business partner on new requirements for applications. They're at that partner focus. You know, I'm the IT group, you're the business customer, let's talk and let's provide service. And there's another group which has been embedded in the finance department for so long that they don't know the difference between accounts payable and SAP or Oracle Financials. In fact, they actually get paid by that business unit that runs that shop and that application. So they're at that partner level. Mm-hmm. So here you have an example where you have various parts of the organizational culture at each stage, and ask them what the role of IT is, and they'll have a very different answer for you.
So how do you, you know, you as a consultant, if you walk into an organization, or one of the listeners who's inside an organization, you know, how does one assess or measure or decide what level that organization is at? How do you read that?
Well, the first comes back to the scope. What is your attempted scope for deployment? Because while one group will get it, another group will be totally against it. An error that I made earlier in my consulting career was, you know, I looked at the book and it just made sense. It was a beautiful thing to think of this enterprise process for change management or problem or incident. And the only way it was going to actually provide value was to have everyone do it across all the functions.
Yep.
But the problem was, while one group thought that was a great idea, two-thirds of the other groups in the same organization couldn't be bothered because it didn't make any sense in the context of where they were at in this model. So one of my changes today is that I basically say how far you can go depends on what the scope of your deployment is. If you're in a shared services group and that's where your ITIL initiative is starting up, but you don't have the application group on board, you can only deploy the process successfully within the scope of your overall influence and governance. Call it a pilot. You know, I don't have to call it done, but don't try to go too wide before the rest of the groups buy in. If you follow me.
Yeah, I do.
You got to look at it more from a focused perspective. I'll never forget when I tried to do release management the first time without the application executives on board with the project. It was very painful.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. If a part of the organization or the organization as a whole is at, you know, the second maturity level, and we want to do stuff that requires them to be at the third, is there any way to transition them, or do you just have to sit around and wait until they get there?
The third level is specifically difficult because that's at the level where you have an enterprise strategy for IT services. And that's when you realize that regardless if you're an application group that's embedded within a business unit, the shared services group, or if you've outsourced three of your major service towers or technology towers, regardless of your sourcing model, you're all just enterprise IT. And so to get there, you have to have an executive governance structure in place that says we all go together in the same direction, and you don't have the ability to each make your own decisions about policy, process. We're going as one, regardless of who pays your salary or what part of the organization or not you find yourself in.
So it's pretty hard for a service delivery manager within the organization or a pink elephant consultant or ITSM consultant like us outside the organization to make that kind of transition happen, right?
It's not going to happen until the executive leadership team basically has this vision, first of all, which is not a given, by the way, and then executes it. Where you'll normally see this is in an organization that knows its business is selling IT services. So a managed service provider, outsourcer, will be usually at a level 3 minimum. And so they'll understand because they're in the business of having enterprise services. But have you ever been in an organization where you have a CIO for the application group and a CTO and the infrastructure group, and there's no overall executive over both?
Yeah.
Well, that's just a recipe
for disaster.
And they both
report to the CFO because it's just an office function.
Right. That's towerism at its highest pinnacle.
Yeah.
Because the services will cross both functions from a point of view of a business service.
And another group that ought to be at that level but aren't always are the ones where IT just is the business. And I'm thinking here of banks again. You know, I worked with the banks, especially in Australia, quite a bit. And, you know, there was one bank in particular which even into the 1990s had this incredibly old-fashioned board and executive that still saw IT as those data processing people who produced the reports for us, and really hadn't twigged to the fact that IT is the business for a bank, that, you know, you take the IT away and the bank's gone. And it was, they were way into the 90s before they woke up to that. And I just think there is, you know, there's a few businesses around still that really haven't made that transition to that maturity at the executive level to realize that their business is just, they are in the IT business.
It's interesting you say this, because you've heard the, of course, the statement, perception is reality. And they haven't understood this, though it is true already. You know, in the U.S., they had a great deal of, and it's still ongoing, about Sarbanes-Oxley, yeah. Right? And of course, internationally, there's an impact, especially in the financial sector. And the interesting thing is that for the first time, banks and other publicly traded companies had to publish with their financial results an IT maturity control statement. Have you ever thought about what that actually means or why that was the case?
It's for that reason.
It's exactly that reason. Here's something interesting. The legislators came to this conclusion way before our general industry, both on the business and IT side. They basically said this: the financial results of your organization are directly a result of your business processes or the maturity thereof. That's an easy one. You know, that has no challenge to the mental perception. But those business processes, a long time ago, were totally digitized and automated within IT systems. Those IT systems have or are influenced directly by the maturity of the IT management practices which you execute against them, and those IT professionals either do or do not do the processes against those systems. So what the legislator simply said was there's no separation between church and state.
Yep.
There is no true separation between the business process and its digital component.
This is one of the huge drivers, isn't it, for people maturing to the point where they are suddenly going, hey, you know, we need some service management.
It's driven by the realization level and the dawning realization level of these various companies. There's an interesting discussion is that you can see a trend internationally about the early adopters of ITSM, and it has two primary drivers, and you've already kind of headed in that direction. It's interesting that you brought up the case study of the bank being the exception, because what you're going to see based on this model is that it is an exception. Typically what we see is the early adopters is the financial services industry, because there is no bank without technology. You've made that statement. Next comes government. I'll come back to that. That's kind of an odd one in. Following government, we usually see utilities. Then after utilities, we see medical pharmaceutical. Following medical pharmaceutical, we see manufacturing. Following manufacturing, we get to services organizations. After that, higher education, and then finally retail. There are two primary drivers here, Rob. One, how early has it dawned upon certain individuals that IT is the line, the manufacturing capability of the organization? And then what legislation has therefore been applied because of the risk of being the line. Mm. The one exception to this rule is the government, because when you're saying, well, it's, you know, what's the analogy there? They're usually driven by the need to do more with less and be financially responsible. So they like to be seen adopting. The interesting thing is they're early adopters from the point of education, but it's not necessarily the fact that they're actually executing it. They're just going to all the right meetings and going to the classes. Mm-hmm. So this kind of plays into the same concept.
You've got a presentation that you're giving at the conference in Vegas next year, 5 Tips for Developing an ITSM Strategic Roadmap. And in that presentation, you talk about the 5-level model that we've just discussed, and
yes.
Several other really cool models, basically. That's what the presentation is, isn't it? Is 5 models rather than, well, as much as tips, I think, that you can apply.
Well, they can be positive or negative. They're critical success factors, so yeah. These are things you should do, but they're also risk if they're not in place. And that's one we've been covering is simply saying, if you go in trying to attempt the wrong process and you're not at the right level of maturity, good luck with that, because the acceptance and organizational readiness is probably not there. There are 4 other critical success factors, too.
And each one has quite an interesting model associated with it. One of the ones that isn't, we won't go through all five of them, because A, that would defeat the purpose of going to the presentation, and B, that would make for a very long, very long podcast. But one of the other ones that you talk about is developing an integrated tool architecture and plan. And of course, anyone who reads the IT Skeptic blog knows that I'm kind of a technology skeptic in general, I guess. So I asked you the question earlier before this recording about, you know, how much do tools really matter to service management?
In reality, if you're even going to get close to the level of benefit, automation, integration, data share that ITIL, you know, kind of promotes and predicts, you can't do it through manual means. It's just way too work intensive. It's the, you know, the dirty little secret of ITIL is you can't do it without automation. And I can say that because we sell no tools, nor affiliated with any tool organization that way. I've tried the Excel spreadsheet route or the SharePoint model. It works for a little bit, but then usually breaks down pretty quickly. Coming back to the tool strategy, and it's the integrated strategy, which is the key point here. Let me give you a simple principle that is the principle of enterprise architecture. Is if you have these integrated business processes or IT processes, then they're probably best supported by an integrated application framework. And you saw this in the ERP space, where why have a separate accounts payable, accounts receivable, inventory management, general ledger? Why not just put them all into a common suite and you have modules of various workflow? Well, that common application frame, because business process as well as IT processes is not, you know, not isolated, they're linear, they're sequential, is requiring a common data source. So if you're going to have a common process framework like ITIL that's integrated, you need a common application layer that's integrated, because at the end you're sharing data. Incidents are identifying problems, problems are identifying changes might be responsible for coordinating multiple releases, and literally you're connecting records against records and everything connects to configuration items. The challenge with that is back to the silo mentality. I know I'm harping on something here. Is that traditionally we buy tools, not by enterprise anything. We buy them by domain. So everyone buys their own tool, by tower, by structure. And so I get multiple monitoring tools, multiple inventory tools, multiple incident tools, multiple change tools. And we create a huge environment of waste by buying tools against a siloed mentality. When all these tools need to integrate, there's nothing that isn't IT practice, regardless of ITIL or not, that doesn't need to share data with something else. In fact, I've seen it get so silly, Rob, that one group will buy the exact same tool from the same vendor for the only reason that the other group wouldn't give them access and wouldn't play with them and give them account in their system because it was their tool.
Yeah, yep. So does that mean that service management leads us to having to do what Charles Betts calls ERP for IT? Do we have to go out and buy an ERP system and go through the sort of transformation or read pain that an organization goes through when they roll out something like SAP at an organizational level?
Well, most of the pain at SAP is the management of change and business process issues we deal with ITIL anyway. Hmm. The technology side is not the real issue. It's the getting people to actually do something different that usually causes the challenge. But let me answer your question specifically. You have two choices. You either go out and get an application suite that's integrated, or you have to integrate your various tools. And then you ask, well, what's the expense? What's the return on investment? The reality is when we go to most organizations and we do an inventory, we find the redundancy is so rampant that if you even consolidated your current inventory of management tools by a third, reducing the license to maintenance costs and infrastructure and support costs, you could basically fund your ITSM program for the next 5 years. Hmm. Essence, yes, we need an integrated strategy to IT management tools because we have integrated IT management processes. And I'm not just talking ITIL.
Is there a scale thing here too? Like, you know, I live in a little country down in the corner of the world where our largest organizations would probably be considered medium business in the US. To have 20,000 users makes you enormous in New Zealand. Is what you're talking about something that belongs in the Fortune 1000, or does the same argument apply in smaller organizations?
It's a fair question, and I've had that question asked both from the point of view of just general process maturity as well as tools. The first is usually you only change when there's pain. So if you can manage it organically the way you're doing today and you're doing a decent job, well, there's a legitimate argument, status quo. But if that complexity is becoming beyond your ability to manage, then the status quo is no longer possible. So let's talk about it from the point of view of both process and tool. Think about a small shop. Does a small shop do changes? Does it fix things? Does it have to move things around? Does it have to plan for next year's capacity? Does it have to recover if a disaster occurs? When you think scope, it's really not so much the breadth of scope, it's more the depth. It's okay to have certain things at a level of maturity where the risk of not having it at that level of maturity doesn't warrant going further. So it's not about, do I not need these things, but how far do I go in my integration of tools? How far do I go in maturing my processes? And so you could argue that everyone needs it, but the relevant risk of not having it integrated can still be managed by what I call Elton John integration. You get the two hands going on two separate systems and coding it into both, and you're willing to pay for that.
In a smaller organization, you still need the process, no matter what the size of the organization. Once you get to pain, you need to improve your process. But in a smaller organization, that is not as certain to involve the need to improve your technology.
Well, you can make your technology go further.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. In the old days, before we had suites of anything, if we wanted to do incident, problem, and change, we used the same service desk product to do it all. In the old days, when we wanted to do integration, we would basically create a flag where we would have an incident, problem, or change, or request, and I'd use that workflow tool to basically say when it came in, I'd put the flag, this one's an incident, this one's a problem. So at least it was in one system, and I could connect to the two records together, but I didn't buy a separate application for change management, even though the advanced tasking would have been nice. I was able to still get some benefit of integration, but I used one application to do multiple things. Hmm. Do you follow me there?
Yep.
Right? So you can still get the goal without spending the cash, if you will. But what you don't want, and I've seen this happen so many times, is creating new silos. And this is one of the other the critical success factors, actually. What happens
in
is this.
In your presentation, yeah, it is, talking about the silos.
Because what happens is someone gets a great idea, we're going to do ITIL here, and they get their teams, and we got to do it faster because we can't just do this one process at a time. And they say, Rob, you take change. Jen, you take problem. Cliff, you take config. And you all go off, you write your process documentation, and you all come back with different tool requirements. You're going to use SharePoint, Rob. Jen's going to use some older version of the service desk product they still have around. And Cliff wants to go off and buy some fancy CMDB tool. So what you've just done is created new process towers on different tools that need to share data when perhaps it should have been all together.
Absolutely. One of the ways I like to look at what you're saying, Troy, is that as IT people, we're far too ready to rush off and do the technology first and then the process, and never even occurs to us to look at the people and the culture. And I think one of the things I really like about your presentation and your ideas is that you are coming at it from the other end and saying the culture needs to be ready and you need to do the process, and that will drive your tools requirements. But that's not something we always hear, is it, from IT people?
No, we love to do the tool first. You know, there's a myth that says, you know, damn the torpedoes, forget the process documentation, just buy a tool and we'll actually inherit the best practices inherent in the product.
Yeah.
I have never seen that happen in my entire career. We buy that product, we pay $500,000 for it or something of that nature, and we basically bastardize it and make it do exactly what we've always done before. We never inherit process from tools. But even process documentation means nothing. In reality, you want to move from one way of doing something to another way, and there's two basic enablers you need to get there. One, unless you write it down, we have this human nature quirk that unless it's on paper and we agree that it's on paper, that it's all subjective, it's relative, and anybody's interpretation is equally valid. So putting it on paper makes it true. And then it's not enough to be on paper, it needs to be visible, and putting it in the tool makes it visible. But those are still just enablers of the goal. And the goal was actually changing activity, behavior, process. But without the two of those things, it becomes just a subjective discussion of, you know, what I'm doing versus what you're doing.
Yeah, the goal is changing people's hearts and minds, right? Getting them to believe and do something different.
Yeah. I'm not trying to make this sound altruistic at all, because it becomes down to just practically doing something different.
Yes, indeed. But I think that your presentation looks like a fantastic starting point for understanding the real issues and, as you say, the real critical success factors to achieving that. And I look forward to attending the presentation in Vegas next year. You can bet I'll be there to listen.
And I hope, well, I appreciate that.
I hope all our listeners will be there to hear it too. One of the questions, for a last wrap-up question, Troy, one of the questions I like to ask anyone in this sort of context who's going to be doing a presentation is, why should someone go to the session? What's in it for them personally? What's the payola for someone who comes along in Vegas to hear your five tips for developing an ITSM strategic roadmap?
It's probably pretty basic, thinking about basic motivators for human nature. Self-preservation is one of them. So we all want to succeed, right? We've been given this task. I like your book, because you have this statement that says, okay, you've just been handed the ITIL project. It's now part of your line item. It's on your your portfolio of things to accomplish. What the heck do you do with this thing, and how do you get it done successfully? So these are the lessons learned, the scars, the critical success factors that allow you at least to raise the flag, if not actually be successful. So personal motivation here is, you can close your eyes and pretend these things aren't here and just try to do the project you've been handed, or you could be successful or at least point out the reasons why this is going down the garden path really quick. So that would be the primary motivation. If you want to find out the biggest critical success factors to a program approach and how to achieve or avoid them, then come to this session.
Fantastic. Troy, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Rob. Nice talking to you today.